Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hello, listeners. Welcome back to Luke's English Podcast. It's Monday, the 8th of May. That's the date today when I'm recording this, 2023. And listeners, I don't know if you noticed, but at the weekend on Saturday, that was Saturday, the 6th of May, check out my counting abilities, backwards counting. Saturday, the 6th of May, it was the coronation of King Charles III. And I thought, probably should do a podcast episode about that, right? It was quite an interesting event. I don't know if, listeners, you managed to see it on television where you were, or maybe you caught some of the footage on the internet or something like that. Anyway, I thought that it would be a good topic to cover. So who better to talk to than my mum and dad? We talked together on the podcast when Charles became king proper. I mean, when he first became king, it seems he's become king twice. I don't know how that's possible, but he became king when the queen died, but then he had to become king officially.
No, he didn't.
All right. So anyway, let's talk to my mum and dad about the coronation of King Charles III. Hello, you two.
Hello, Luke.
Hello, Luke.
Hello, how are you?
We're all right. How
Fine.
Are you?
Very well, thanks. Very well. Good. So, Mum, you just corrected me there.
Yes.
I said that King Charles became king when the queen died, but then the coronation happened, he became king again. And you said, no, he didn't. What did I get wrong?
He became king the moment the queen died.
Right.
Spiritual thing went from the queen to him and he became king. He didn't need to be crowned. It just happened. So he didn't need to have a coronation at all. He wanted to have one, so he had one.
It's traditional, and I know it's a good excuse for a bit of a party.
And spend millions of pounds.
Wait a minute. So if that didn't need to happen... Well, I mean, you may have just answered that question, why did it happen? But I mean, all the stuff that there were things that happened in the ceremony that seemed to be very sort of significant and spiritual, right? Like there was an anointing and there was a whole religious spiritual aspect to it with like holy oil and magic hats and things.
Magic swords and magic gloves.
Don't mean to be disrespectful, but yes, sort of special magic objects and things were involved. Okay, should we start at the start? Let's start at the start. Dad, what actually happened on Saturday? I have just said, but I'll let you say it again because you're probably better at this than me.
Okay, so. It rained. Apparently this is traditional on coronation days. It rained on Elizabeth's coronation day and I think ones before that, Victoria's, and so on. So traditional that it rained. It was a long and elaborate ceremony with thousands and thousands of people queuing overnight to get good positions. And what happens is that the coronation happens in Westminster Abbey. The king and his queen consort, now the queen.
She was the queen then.
Yeah. They kept calling her the Queen Consort on the telly, but
and then all of a
then suddenly
she
they're calling her Queen,
the Queen
Camilla. Anyway, this was a ceremony, a public ceremony, so that even though he was already the king, this was the coronation. So a public ceremony. And they got into a rather fancy coach, which was not the one which is the golden coach, but it was called the Diamond Jubilee coach.
There's quite a lot of gold on it, though, wasn't there?
Yeah, it had a bit of gold on the top.
There was an awful lot of gold everywhere.
And it had air conditioning, it had nice suspension so that they weren't going to be rattled around too much. Electric windows, though, of course, they wouldn't use them. And they rode in state with a big procession in front of them from Buckingham Palace, past all the crowds, round, past through Trafalgar Square and down Whitehall to Westminster Abbey in Parliament Square.
They took the long route, didn't they?
Well, it's kind of L-shaped.
I looked at the map. They could have just gone from here to here, but they went all the way. I don't know if they realised that. I mean, surely they know their own city. Is there a one-way system? Why did they take such a long route?
I think the sat-nav told them they ought to go that way. Anyway, there were loads and loads of people watching, and it's the traditional route, and it goes past some iconic places like the cenotaph and things like that.
Yes, absolutely.
So then there was the ceremony. Apparently, according to Jill, who knows about these things, they arrived a bit early, and Charles got a bit grumpy as they had waited the carriage for about 5 minutes.
Yeah, remember when your wife was texting? We were texting to each other, weren't we? Because you were still on your holiday.
Yeah.
And your wife said, "Why is he so grumpy? Or why is he? Why does he look fed up?" And I hadn't been watching, so I didn't know what she meant. But she was quite right. Apparently, they arrived early and they had to wait outside the abbey because, you know, it wasn't time for them to go in. And Charles, apparently, people have been lip-reading what he was saying, and he was really cross and grumpy, saying, "Why does this always happen? Why are we never on time? This is so boring."
I understood when he said, so exactly, lip readers have been interpreting what he was saying because we could see him through the window and he was, you could see he was kind of like looking a bit frustrated and saying things, and his body language showed that he was grumpy. And that's right, my wife texted to you and said, "Why is he so grumpy?" And you replied, "He's always grumpy." but in that particular moment, yes, professional lip readers, people who are able to understand what people are saying just by looking at their lips. So Charles has not learnt from professional football managers who these days, all the football coaches cover their mouths when they talk to each other now because of, you know, they know that people can lip read. So lip readers are saying that Charles was saying, "Oh God, you know, no, I don't think he said, oh God." He said,
"No, I don't think he would have done that."
He said, this is all annoying. There's always a delay and this is so boring. I think when he said this is so boring, I don't know if he meant this is so boring for me. What he meant is this is so boring for the show, you know.
Possibly.
This moment in this big show that we're putting on, this is a boring moment. So I think he was probably getting frustrated for that reason.
Yes, I think you're right. And I think also we have to be, you know, generous to him. He was probably a bag of nerves. And what they wanted it to be was an absolutely perfect ceremony. And it was extremely complicated and long. So he wouldn't have appreciated having to wait. Anyway, once they did dismount from this fancy carriage pulled by six Windsor Grey horses, dressed up in special livery, they went in, and of course all the guests had already arrived. There were lots and lots of people from Commonwealth countries representing different groups in the UK. All the former prime ministers were there, including shambling Boris Johnson, who looked like he'd had a heavy night. And they process down the nave where a lot of guests are sitting. But the guests won't be able to see a lot of the actual coronation because it goes under the organ loft past a screen, a choir screen, through the choir area, which is where the family are and, you know, all that, into the crowning area. They called it the Coronation Theatre, big gold carpet.
Well, it's the high altar.
And in front of the high altar. And then there are a whole load of amazingly, to my mind, fatuous ceremonies, but a lot of it is traditional. This included screens coming round him at one point. So he had to be disrobed from various layers of robes so that they could anoint him with this oil.
We watched him getting undressed on live television. To be fair, people undressed him. I mean, there's going to be some people, I'm aware that when we talk about this in a sort of jokey kind of way, that some people will think it's disrespectful. But I mean,
it probably is.
This is the great thing. We have the right to make fun little jokes about the ceremony. You know, there are no guns pointed to our heads. We're not going to be thrown in jail. I know, Mum, you've got some strong opinions about it. We'll get there.
Yeah,
you do have some strong views about it. We'll get there. But yes, he got... So sorry to interrupt you, Dad. Yes, he got disrobed. They took his clothes off and stuff. He was anointed, you said.
Yes, they brought some special oil all the way from Jerusalem for this.
It was olive oil. In previous coronations, they had ambergris, which is from Wales, and they had something from civet from cats, all sorts of weird stuff.
These weird stuff.
But this, because it's a modern service.
Oh, right, of course.
And with
did you see his shoes? They weren't modern.
Very beautiful, though, weren't
17th
they?
Century sort of style. But yeah, very nice. Golden buckles, lovely. Yeah.
Well, be honest, it was an extraordinary thing to watch. I mean, I found it fascinating. The whole thing was fascinating. It went on and on and on.
Talking about his clothes, the best bit, when he was being disrobed, I mean, they don't take all his clothes off. They just take all the big fancy robes off. So he's just got a white shirt underneath, not a Marks and Spencer's type shirt. Shirt with the rough round, you know. Anyway, beautiful linen shirt. So that he doesn't, they didn't get any of the oil on the beautiful clothes. And then, of course, when that's all over, they get him dressed again, and they put a tunic on him, a white tunic, a bit like a nightie. And then over the top of that, there was a thing like a dressing gown, which was called the super tunica.
Sorry, this is what?
Latin. Yeah, it was the called super the super tunic. Tunica.
Super tunic, like the way Superman's like a super, like an outfit, like a costume, like a superhero.
I think the word super means over the top.
Over the top.
But its name was
a bit over the top, wasn't it? Really? The whole thing was over the top. Anyway.
Well, I mean, I have to say it was rather wonderful. It was a beautiful gold, you know, it's a nice dressing gown. I wouldn't mind having it.
A bit heavy, no? Isn't it made of gold?
Well, probably gold thread or something.
Difficult to put in the wash. You can't put that in the washing machine.
Yeah, very unpractical.
Mm. Anyway, the anointing though, Dad. So the olive oil, we're not allowed to see that because it's so holy and sort of
No, we don't see that.
We're not allowed to see that. But what do they do with the oil, and why do they do things with oil?
They have to kind of lubricate their head to let the crown go on.
They have to lubricate his head. No,
stop it.
I'm sorry, everybody. I'm sorry. I can't help it. Okay. I can't help making jokes, but you know, they've got a sense of humor. King Charles has got a sense of humor, hasn't he?
Yeah, he liked the Goons when he was younger.
He liked the Goon show, and he turns up. He has comedians at his, Royal Variety performances and stuff. So they must have a sense of humour. William cracked a couple of gags in his speech at the party, didn't he?
No, I didn't see it.
Anyway, so the anointing, what's all that about?
We don't know what happens. They probably just dab a bit on here and there.
It's all part of the mystery and the magic. I mean...
Anyway, the rest of it is amazing. I mean, all these traditional items that are presented to him by various people.
And he just touches them, and then they take them away again.
I mean, what did we have? We had, what was the first one? The ceremonial presentation.
We had the scepter. I've got them.
Well, I know.
There's a scepter with a cross, which is gold, a gold rod encrusted with gems, most notably the Cullen and diamond, or some of it.
Or part of it.
Yes.
It's huge. It's about that big.
That's the full size diamond. And there was the orb, of course, which represents the world, is it?
I don't know what it means.
There were several scepters. There were several swords. The big sword, that was fantastic. This was held by a woman who is an MP, who is a senior member of the parliament. She holds a position there, Lord something or other. And she had to hold this massive sword completely impassively for hours and hours on end.
There was a neck break.
She became a kind of viral success. Penny Mordaunt.
She is the president of the council. President of the council. That's why she...
Whatever that is. But it looked like something out of The Lord of the Rings or the Game of Thrones.
She had two swords at Chepstow Canary. One was the sword of state, which represents authority. And the other was a sword. Oh, no, several. There's the sword of temporal justice, the sword of spiritual justice, and the sword of mercy, which is blunted. All the others are
These are all presented to him and he kind of touches them, though, of course, he holds on to the orb and scepter for a while.
I missed one. And also the sword of offering.
Oh. And then there's the glove. Did you note the glove? It's a single gauntlet.
Yeah, he wore one glove. Yeah.
And he wears that to hold the scepter for reasons unknown. But there's a whole lot of ritual. It's incredible.
It's only three times when we ever wear, when someone wears one glove, right? When you're taking something out of the oven, when you're playing golf, and when you're getting crowned king. Those are the only times you wear one glove, unless you've only got one hand.
Yeah. When you're putting fuel on the fire.
Fuel on the fire, putting fuel on the fire. There's another one. So these are all sort of symbolic things.
Yes,
all of these
indeed.
Jewels and weapons and the scepters, which are these metal rods that represent sort of the power of God and things like that, right?
And tradition, very much so. There was also presentation of a very, very valuable book, which is in part of the Westminster Abbey collection. I think it's 6th century. Illuminated manuscript, one of the first of its type, which is in their possession. And did it come from Lindisfarne? Anyway, even that was presented to him, and he touches all these sacred objects and traditional things that have been used in coronations for centuries.
A lot of them go back centuries and centuries. They're very, very old. The Stone of Destiny, which is not something from a Harry Potter story. It's real. The Stone of Destiny, I understand, is what... Well, who... tell me
it's
about
the...
Do you,
stone
do you know?
That used to be you. It's the Stone of Scone, is what I used to know, how I used to know it when I was a kid. And it's a great big piece of rock, and it's what apparently what the Scottish kings were crowned on. They sat on it for their coronation. And the English stole it and brought it down to London to use as their coronation stone. And eventually the Scots kicked up a fuss. In fact,
It was stolen.
It was stolen by some just ordinary robbers once, many years ago when we were kids. And
ordinary robbers, not like
ordinary robbers.
Well, they weren't political robbers.
They weren't knights and kings and all.
They
that.
Weren't in uniforms, basically.
They were just ordinary blokes. And okay. They took it away because, I mean, they were Scots nationalists and they wanted to take it back to Scotland. But anyway, they were found. The police found them, but in the process, the stone got broken.
They dropped it.
Oh gosh.
So it's now repaired. Anyway, they've managed to agree that it should go back up to Scotland. So most of the time it's in Scotland. This Stone of Destiny is always, as I say, the Stone of Scone when I was a kid. But they bring it down to London ceremoniously. About 2 days before the coronation, there was a ceremonial taking down of the Stone of Scone, which is placed under the coronation chair on its own special ledge. So he sits on the chair, which is on top of the stone.
Okay. These things are significant only because they've been used again and again and again.
Well, they're significant because they're given significance.
Yes.
Someone decides it's significant.
Yeah.
It's all magical thinking, a lot of it.
And anyway, finally, he actually sat in the coronation chair.
You haven't said all the things he was given.
Oh, go on.
He was also given some spurs.
Oh, yes.
And
what are spurs? I know what they are, but my listeners might not.
Ah, right. Spurs are horrible, sharp things that you have on the back of your boot. So that when you kick your horse, when you're riding your horse, you kick with your boot, the heel of your boot. And having the spurs makes it all sharp and it makes it even more difficult for the horse. Makes the horse go faster, but it's also very cruel. No, people don't use them now.
But they are now ceremonial. Yeah. The knights would wear spurs ceremonially.
Actually, I think some of the...
And I think they represent honour.
Some of the... yes, you have to earn your spurs. Some of the I don't know what they were, household cavalry or one of that lot that were in the actual procession. They wear spurs, but they just they don't use them.
And on the way back, Princess Anne, who of course is a Olympic standard horsewoman, she was wearing a lot of ceremonial garb, and that included spurs. The commentators are pointing out that she had to make sure she didn't by accident stick her spurs in the horse, but they knew that she was perfectly capable of avoiding that. Mm-hmm. Yes, a lot of the ceremonial stuff that the officers were wearing included spurs, pointy things on the back of their boots.
Okay, but so he had to touch some spurs.
Yeah,
spurs. Mm-hmm. And when he was anointed with oil from an ampule, which was pure gold in the shape of some sort of mythical bird, a bit like
a phoenix or something.
Yeah, yeah, with its wings outstretched, and the oil comes out of the bird's mouth, and they use the coronation spoon, which is a large gold spoon which is encrusted with pearls.
It's extremely old, the spoon.
And he's also given two bracelets.
Oh, yes.
Which symbolise knighthood and military leadership. Okay. And they sincerity and wisdom.
There's a ring in there somewhere as well.
Yeah, the sovereign's ring, which is sapphire, ruby and diamond, which symbolises kingly dignity. And so on. It goes on and on and on.
So,
and then
finally, the Archbishop of Canterbury, you know, puts him in the coronation chair while Camilla looks on from the background and takes the imperial crown. I think that's what it's called.
No, it's the St. Edward's crown.
Is
or
it?
King Edward's crown.
Because there's lots of different crowns.
There are different crowns, but this is an enormous one. And
it's the St. Edward's crown, which has 444 precious stones on it, and it weighs 5 pounds.
How much is that in kilograms?
2 kilos.
Oh, sorry.
Two kilos.
Two?
Mm. Yeah, I would have thought.
That's quite heavy to have to have on your head.
Especially when it's
quite
tall.
And when everyone's looking at you as well.
Yeah.
And once it's on his head, everybody says, God save the king.
And he's like and this for the rest of
And this. There's Handel's, what's its name?
Zadok the priest was when they were anointing him.
Oh, that's the music you're referring to.
Yes, wonderful. Yes,
Purcell. That's the best bit of the whole thing.
I agree. I thought the music was amazing, especially the Welsh singer.
Oh, yeah, Bryn Terfel. Yeah.
Incredible. Yeah, incredible voice.
And there was a special orchestra there playing, you know, in the build-up, lots of different music. And then Camilla got her crown.
Her crown is Queen Mary's crown.
Again, it's a big. And big interestingly, they had to adjust it to fit her head. So I was very interested in that. I wondered whether her head was smaller, therefore they could just put some lining in it, or whether it was bigger, in which case they'd have to do something to it.
So they had adjusted it before the ceremony.
Of course
they had.
In advance.
Yeah. But so they I saw it, they kind of like put it on her head and like kind of had to twist it left and right to kind of fit it snugly on. And she was bothered by her hair. Her hair seemed to be getting in the way. She had to move her hair out of the way and I mean just looking at it made me anxious.
Yes.
Just watching those moments made me anxious. And I was thinking, my God, imagine if it slipped and fell. That would be I mean, we talk about historic moments. That would have been that would have been something else. But thankfully, it didn't. I mean, you know, we didn't really want to see that.
They must have practiced a fair bit. But they were both, when they were wearing the crown, well, not her, not so much because hers was lighter, but he was very sort of like this all the way. But he didn't have to wear it from then on. He wore it for a while, and then they both went into a sort of retiring room behind the altar.
Where they probably both went, oh, God. Oh.
Yeah. And Camilla probably said, oh, give us a fag.
give us a cigarette. So they probably went to the loo, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When they came back out, King Charles had taken off the coronation crown and he was wearing the imperial state crown instead, which is slightly smaller.
Still pretty impressive.
So he then.
And she had a different crown as well.
Did she? I thought she was wearing the same one.
No, she had a different one.
You know that for a fact?
No, I don't know it for a fact. It just looked smaller.
Looked like the same one to me.
A great big one. It was a small
one. We'll check it, but I don't know. I didn't hear about her. It's one of those occasions when your father said, oh, yes.
Yeah, different crowns. Like, are you sure? No.
Do you really know that? No.
And then, of course, they walk out of the abbey and get into the gold coach. Incredibly elaborate.
You mean the even more gold coach?
More gold. This one's completely
entirely
gold.
Entirely gold coach. A very, very old one.
And this one has 8 white horses. And then it's a parade back through all the crowds and a lot of waving.
But talking of waving, Charles's wave is different to the Queen's. Have you noticed? The Queen was famous for her wave, which was like holding her hand up with the fingers held together and sort of like rotating the hand, you know, back and forwards in a rotating wave like this. Yeah. But Charles kind of does this, he kind of, what's the word for it? How would you describe what he does? He sort of like wiggles his fingers at the crowd like that, wiggling the fingers, and so does Camilla. They kind of do a finger wiggling kind of wave. Mm-hmm. So iconic, an iconic wave has been introduced here into the whatever. Okay, and they paraded back to Buckingham Palace.
All the way back to Buckingham Palace.
With phalanxes and phalanxes of military, I don't know. There was all sorts.
The troops were, it was absolutely amazing. Obviously, the mounted bands were at the front of this thing.
The army, the RAF, the Marines,
the Navy. And altogether, there were 9,000 troops involved in the event, with 4,000 in the parade itself. And they all gathered in the garden behind Buckingham Palace to give their own tribute to the king, which was actually very impressive. They're all in these great straight rows, and they all go hip hip rah, hip hip rah, with their hat. And the balcony scene, of course, is traditional. The king and queen come out, and members of the working royals. So that means that Harry and Andrew were not to be seen. And then there was a fly pass. The weather was very poor, so it was reduced, but at least the Red Arrows, the famous acrobatic team, came shooting over with red, white, and blue smoke.
Yeah, nice. They used the French flag for that. That was quite interesting. No, red, white, and blue, yes. They also are colours of the UK flag and the American flag and the Russian flag and the Dutch flag and the Thai flag and the Czech Republic. And anyway, but so there was a flyover, the Red Arrows, these planes that flew over, leaving trails of smoke.
So that was the event. All the crowds were allowed to come from behind the barriers and walk all the way down the Mall to form a huge crowd outside Buckingham Palace, around what's called the Victoria Monument, a memorial or whatever it is, statue.
Yeah.
And, they all cheered and waved and had a good time. So this all took how long from the beginning when they left Buckingham Palace to head for the Abbey?
That was about 10 o'clock.
Until the waving on the balcony, it must have been about
2 o'clock, probably.
No, 4-5 hours. Anyway, 4 hours. Quite a long event. And, of course, it rained, which is a bit of a shame because the next day was lovely. And the what happened the next day was this big concert in the grounds of Windsor Castle with lots of stars and spectacular scenes and it was, said to be demonstrating our commitment to music and the arts and everything. It wasn't just pop music. There were other things.
Why did you go home, Mum?
Because the government has cut a huge amount of our arts funding.
And today, Dad, you
I just say today, it's street parties and volunteering. So the king has made it known that he wanted this day to honor or recognize volunteering and encouraging. Yes, it's called Big Help Out.
It's extraordinary. I think this country's run by volunteers anyway, as it is.
Yeah. And the Big Help Out. So it's like he couldn't have just sold off a few of those diamonds to maybe contribute to the No. We've got to volunteer. We've got to volunteer and do it all for free. Okay.
So the question is whether the nation was united in joy behind this great event or whether it wasn't.
And was the nation united in joy behind this great event, or was it not?
We don't know, really. We don't know, do we?
Things we do know, that in Scotland, which of course has a strong independence movement.
And Wales.
Not as strong in Wales, but in Scotland it is. Mm. There were thousands of people demonstrating in Glasgow and some in Edinburgh. Thousands marched in Glasgow in favour of Scottish independence and saying, not our king. This is what a lot of placards say. Not my king. Not my king. They say so a few other things as well. Some of them not very complimentary, like you can stick your crown up your whatever.
Yeah.
But there's a definitely a big division of opinion in Scotland. I mean, some people were very happy to have their celebrations, but it wasn't quite universal. In Wales, similar. The independence movement in Wales is much smaller and more muted, but there are still demonstrations there. Northern Ireland, of course, is deeply divided. There is a loyalist Protestant section of the community and a Republican section of the community.
And then all the other people in the middle who just want to be normal, right?
Yes.
A lot of people just want a party.
Yeah, a lot of people want a party. Anyway, in the loyalist areas of Northern Ireland, there were big parties and lots of, red, white and blue and all that stuff. But in the Republican areas, nothing at all. In England, I think that we've got some opinion surveys taken just before the coronation, which are quite interesting in themselves. It is 70 years since the last coronation. And a huge amount has changed in society in 70 years. I mean, massive amount. And, I'm old enough to vaguely remember Elizabeth's coronation, going round to a neighbor's house where they had a TV and seeing these flickering images on a black and white TV set. And at that time, everybody was into the coronation. There was no thought of any protests.
Well, the world was different then. The
world was completely different.
It was just we'd not long been out of the war. We were still in rationing, I think.
Yes, we were.
And she was young. She was, 23? Three, something like
this
that.
This is 1952 you're talking about.
53,
the coronation, okay.
And she was young. She was beautiful. She was, she was a symbol of hope and, the future and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
She had no history. Nobody knew anything about her. Whereas now, we've got this king who's 74 and has had the most colourful history, really. His first wife, he divorced, having cheated on her for years with the person who's now queen. And, all sorts of scandals really have attached to him in various ways. And he's old and he's curmudgeonly and he's grumpy and he can't possibly be a symbol of hope for the future the way the Queen was. So it's strange. It's just different.
He is the oldest monarch
ever
to be crowned ever.
In this country.
In the world.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Gosh.
As I said, there were some opinion surveys done by big polling organizations. So just a quick summary. This was done just before the coronation. 62% want the monarchy to continue. So nearly two out of three want the monarchy to continue. 25% want an elected head of state, one in four, and the others are don't knows. But if you look at the breakdown of the age groups, 18 to 24-year-olds, 41% want an elected head of state, and only 31% want the monarchy to continue. So there's quite a clear majority for those who think that there should be an elected head of state and the monarchy should be ended between the 18 to 24-year-olds. And in the other age categories, the older you get, the more support you get for the monarchy. But it is obviously something that the institution must worry about, that the younger people are much less keen on continuing with what is obviously an illogical way of having a head of state. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. It's just massive tradition. And amongst the royals' popularity, William is the most popular. Charles comes in, I think, about number four.
And Kate is very popular as well, of course.
Yes, Kate is popular too. So obviously, they will say, well, they are the future. And they're already being very prominent. And they're obviously doing lots of functions. And they're being very informal and all that kind of thing. So even though Charles represents in many ways the past and the tradition, I think that the palace, the institution, will probably look to William and Kate to be the new face of the royals.
And if younger generations are less enthusiastic about the monarchy is probably going to change in order to survive, right? Because that's what it does. That's what it's always done. And that means it'll probably try to find a way to be more acceptable to everyone. I wonder what that change will look like.
Well, Charles said that he was in favour of, thinning down, only having a small number of working royals so that fewer members of the family are paid for, which I think is the way to do it, really. I think they should thin it right down to probably only the king and queen.
Because a lot of the issue that people have with it is that there's a lot of wealth involved and a lot of people, being paid for by the taxpayer. And if that is kind of slimmed down, and it's less costly and less sort of, what's the word for it? Less showy.
Well, yes. I mean, that was one thing about the coronation, that it was flaunting all this wealth, all these jewels, all this gold through the streets of London, where there are people living who have nothing, have practically nothing, or are really in trouble. They can't afford anywhere to live. They can't afford much food, all that stuff. And it's just not right that they should do that. They should flaunt all this stuff in front of people who are really struggling.
Yeah, it's two things. We're in the middle of a really serious cost of living crisis in which lots of people are facing, really difficult times because they can't afford to heat their homes and pay the bills and stuff. And there are all these incredibly valuable gold and diamond encrusted objects being put on display and we don't really even know why exactly.
No.
There's that, which sort of seems a bit distasteful or inappropriate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, where do those jewels and where does that gold come from? Now, some of it does come from the United Kingdom, like there's gold in Wales and stuff like that.
Yeah, but a lot of this stuff is, as you're alluding to, I think, was taken during the empire. But in fact, there's another, the Cullinan diamond was from South Africa. And that was taken, because it was part of our empire, and somebody found it. We said, "Oh, right, we'll have that."
Yeah.
And we took it away, and same thing happened in India. The Kohinoor diamond, which it used to be in one of the crown jewels. I forget which. I think maybe it was one of the scepters. Anyway, they don't use that anymore because it's so controversial and India wants it back.
Yeah, these very valuable things, yeah, as you say, were taken. Now, the circumstances in which they were taken, we're not entirely sure. Some of them may have just been taken, claimed.
Yeah.
There may have been some sort of negotiation. Maybe it was like, well, you know, very nice shiny stones you've got. How about 10 bags of rice? Okay.
Yeah, but in the empire, we were running the countries. We were actually in charge of the countries. You know,
yeah.
The governors were the governors. And if they found a valuable diamond, there was no question that they would ship it off to London and say, how about this one then? I mean, there was no argument. The times have changed enormously, and there is a Republican movement. There are protesters, people who, you know, want to show that they are against the monarchy. It is, as you alluded to, it is an incredibly wealthy family. I mean, staggeringly wealthy. They have huge land, property. Their art collection, you know, is worth a lot. Apparently, yeah. The Queen owns about £30 million worth of horses.
Well, she did. They're selling quite a lot of them, apparently.
Yes. And so who do these things belong to? Do they belong to them or do they belong to the state? Well, it appears it belongs to their family. And the interesting thing about the costs is that nobody is quite sure how much is going to cost the taxpayer, the coronation itself, never mind the ongoing assistance to the expenses of the royals, and there is some, and they have tax breaks. In order to perform their duties, the estimate in the papers for how much it's costing the taxpayer, the coronation, is £250 million, which is quite a lot of millions of pounds. And of course, you know, how that's broken down is impossible to say.
It's
the military probably have to submit quite a bill. It'll cost them an awful lot.
I mean, the argument is that, you know, it's a feel-good moment for the country and, you know, you can't put a price on it and stuff like that. But on the other hand, the NHS, the National Health Service, is really badly struggling. There's lots of people who are sick, old people, you know, children who are sick, and they desperately need healthcare and they need money to fund it. And
the point would be much more of a feel-good factor.
Yeah, but yeah, it's very hard to get a doctor's appointment if you fall over and hurt yourself. You have to wait a long time for an ambulance to come because, you know, there aren't enough ambulances or drivers. The National Health Service is really badly in need of financial help.
And another thing, the government has brought forward this bill which says that you cannot protest about something on the street. If you're going to cause disruption. And that they will stop you, the police will stop you. And the police before the coronation said, we won't put up with any kind of disruption. If anything happens, we will, you know, we'll deal with it very harshly. And they
announced it in a way that was, you know, it could have been interpreted as a threat.
It didn't throw them in jail, but they detained them for hours on end until the event was over.
And they weren't even protesting. They had some banners which they were going to use, and they were loading them off a lorry in Trafalgar Square, I think it was. And the police saw this, and they just went up and arrested them all, put them in handcuffs, and took them away.
Before they had done anything?
Yeah.
Before they'd actually done anything, yeah.
And apparently some people managed to get into the crowd, I think another group of people, with some placards and banners and things, and they were holding them up during the procession. And the police went in with barriers.
Screens
to put in front of them so nobody could see them.
It's, you can understand it. I mean, you can understand that they would say there's going to be millions and millions and millions of people watching this on TV around the world. We want it to go really, really well. And there are thousands and thousands of people coming to London, stand in the rain for hours on end because they want to cheer and wave. And they don't want that experience to be spoiled by a few people chanting or waving placards in their faces. And so they took the decision that they're not going to have any disruption. There will be no disruption. This will go smoothly and brilliantly, which in fact it did. But the problem is that they've got a law which is substantially undemocratic in that the police have the power to arrest someone if they think they might cause disruption. So it's a tricky one.
And something like an event like this, a very high-profile, extraordinary, unique event like this, they bring the laws in sort of under the cover of this event, and then the laws stay in place. So yeah, that if someone wants to, for example, protest against any other law that the government chooses to implement, for example, laws against green energy or laws, you know, like environmental decisions by the government. If people come in to protest that or to, you know, make statements about the environment or any other issue, that the police then have the power to round them up and arrest them and take
it's
them
strangeful.
Away.
I mean, we've always had the freedom of, you know, protest. And now we're very similar to Russia. You're not allowed to say that you don't agree
getting
with something.
Getting there.
We're definitely getting there. And it got to the point, what was it people were protesting about a few months ago? It ended up with the protesters holding up blank pieces of paper.
Right.
Because it was obviously obvious that they were protesting, but the blank pieces of paper didn't say anything. It was a symbolic, if you like, protest, a bit like everything else this weekend that's symbolic. It's very clever because it demonstrates to people the ridiculousness of the whole thing, that, you know, you don't have to be actually saying anything. You just have to be there holding something so that people know that you're not happy, but you're not actually making a noise or protesting, or you're just holding this piece of paper. And they are so, I mean, the thing that gets me is how unsure of his position is the king if he is happy for any kind of dissent to be stamped on like that. I mean, doesn't he feel bad about it?
I don't feel as strongly as Jill about what happened on Saturday. I do think it's a dangerous precedent, but I think the authorities were in a very difficult position. If people had started chanting and making a noise in that crowd, they probably would have caused a riot. It was a handful of people, really.
They arrested
52 people. There were probably a few hundred people who'd come there to say, we don't want monarchy.
Exactly.
But that, you know, you've got to balance that against the thousands and thousands who came there to cheer. It's a very difficult situation. You can argue that you can't wait till they start shouting and then arrest them because, you know, they've done it. So on this particular occasion, I think that it was a difficult call to say we don't want anything disrupting this event. But the precedent is terrible, and I think that what I would like to see is that this little law that was rushed through, which is the one that says if the police suspect something, they can arrest people, I think that should be repealed. If the Labour government win the next election, which is probably next year, I wouldn't be at all surprised if they do repeat it.
I sincerely hope they will.
Let's hope so, right?
Yes. Yeah, I think it's a dangerous
Yeah.
Anyway, there you are. We've had the coronation, but the debate goes on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
I don't know what we compare our royal family with other European royal families. I mean, they're all interlinked, of course, and there's a lot of them. But all the others have modernized quite a lot, and they've slimmed down, and they are much less formal, and they don't have most of this stuff. The closest you get to it is the presidential stuff in France, where you know, they have big ceremony for the president of France.
On the 14th of July in France every year, there's a huge military procession which marches through the centre of the city, and a lot of those roads are completely closed off and stuff, and lots of soldiers with weapons and stuff, and the president's there standing watching it. And Donald Trump, when he came, he's like, you know, this is fantastic. I want to have the same thing. You know, he wanted to have the same thing when he got back home, you know, They do a fly past as well with all these military planes flying over the city one after the other. So, yeah, it happens in republics as well, this, as
yes,
we know.
I mean, but in the other European countries with royal families, like Spain and the Scandinavian countries, Netherlands, they have a much less ceremonial presence, and they're much less formal, and they mingle with people at all sorts of events very casually.
And they don't flaunt all their jewels in front of everyone.
So it's not really a question of should we have a royal family or not, which is a very sort of binary kind of question, right? Instead, it's more kind of like, well, if we have one, what do we want it to be like, and how do we want it to operate, and what do we want it to, you know, to show to everyone? Mm. You know, it's not just simply should we have them or should we cut their heads off? Mm. You know, no one's talking about that. Instead, it's a question of, should it be reformed or changed in some way?
Yeah. I'm sure you're
completely,
right.
Or should it be replaced completely with a republic? But that's, as we've said many times before, that brings its own problems too. Would we want to have President Boris Johnson, for example?
I agree with you entirely. Yes. If you did a survey here in 10 years' time, I'm sure people would still want to keep the monarchy. But it's a question of, you know, what type, as you say, what style. And the alternative is a big issue. You know, if you decided you didn't want the monarchy, what would you do? And you'd have an elected president like everybody else does. And it brings politics into the head of state. The head of state is suddenly a political person. The only country I can think of which managed to avoid that is Ireland, where they tend to have a non-political president as much as that's possible. But in other countries, the tension between the powers of the president and the powers of the parliament often cause loads and loads of problems. And I think that in logic, you would say, well, the royal family is not democratic. Nobody voted for them. But if you do vote for people, you suddenly divide the country between who supports the president and who doesn't.
Yeah. If you get a situation where one president gets, you know, oh, anyway.
One of the changes, of course, is that Queen Elizabeth was a unifying force. Charles is much more divisive because of the way the society has changed so dramatically. And people are asking logical questions. So we'll see what happens. I mean, I think what you were saying is right. The prediction is that they'll have to adjust what they do and their style quite a lot to retain the support of majority of people.
Just, I was going to say two things about having a president. One of them is the idea that power corrupts, right? So there's like a, you know, the idea of having a democratically elected president isn't always as brilliant as it sounds, because elections can be rigged.
Yeah.
And the electoral process can be interfered with.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, let's not go into all of that right now, but you know, that's true. And that's it. It's just power corrupts and elections sometimes are not fair.
Well, okay. Yeah. Sometimes I don't know about technically unfair, but the campaigning can be unfair. Which is another issue altogether.
And there can be interference.
There can be interference. I think that people hold up democracy and say, it's not democratic, it's not democratic. Well, democracy is not perfect. I mean, it is faulty in all sorts of ways. In this country, we still have a parliament elected on what's called the first-past-the-post system, which means that whoever gets the most votes in a constituency goes to parliament. But that person can be elected with, say, 32% of the vote.
Yeah.
And all the other votes are split between everybody else. So you're getting the person who is least disliked. The other thing, of course, is that in America, they elect judges. That politicizes the courts. I mean, it is essential in a democracy that you have independent judges. And you have an independent civil service and, in my view, independent mass media. But that's another question. I mean, the democracy, who voted for that judge? Who voted for that newspaper editor? Why can they say these things? It doesn't work simply that, you can't have democracy filtering its way all the way down through society. It just doesn't work. It becomes divisive, very divisive. So the notion of this ludicrous idea that, you know, there's this bloodline going back thousands of years and they are the heads of state, it works pretty well if they don't have any power. If they're just ceremonial. Well, they put on a show.
I don't know.
It all depends on whether you think that it depends on how you define it works very well, doesn't it? You know,
yes.
We could keep debating this for ages, but all throughout the coronation ceremony, I kept thinking of that Monty Python sketch that I love so much, the constitutional peasants, where King Arthur is riding across a field and he's trying to find Camelot Castle.
I am your king!
And he comes across a couple of peasants who are collecting mud in a field. And he shouts to one of them, "Old woman!" And the peasant goes, "Man!" And King Arthur's like, and he's like, "Old man!" And he says, I'm 38 years old. And he said, "Well, you know, I didn't know." And King Arthur says, "I didn't know how old you were. I couldn't tell from the back." He's like, "Well, you didn't bother to find out, did you?"
It's Michael Palin, isn't it?
Yeah, it goes on and on and on. And then, you know, the peasant meets his wife or whatever, and she says, "Who are you?" And he says, "I am Arthur, King of the Britons." And she says, "Who are the Britons?" And he goes, "Well, we're all Britons, and I am your king." And she says, "And how'd you become king? I didn't vote for you." And he says, "Well, you don't, you know, he says, how'd you become king? I didn't vote for you." And then he starts talking about this sort of spiritual way in which he's been, you know, given the divine right to become the king. The Lady of the Lake, her arm, dressed in glistening samite, raised her hand with Excalibur the sword, indicating by divine providence that I, Arthur, should be your king. And then Michael Palin's character says, "Strange women lying in ponds distributing swords is no basis for the system of government. Supreme executive power derives from a mandate from the masses, not from some farcical aquatic ceremony." And it goes on and on and on. So yeah,
it's very good.
Yes, it's a very funny sketch, and it's very good at it. It does sort of highlight the ridiculousness of it, but also the sort of majesty of it, because Michael Palin's peasant, who goes on to explain that he's an anarchist.
Yeah.
He's an anarcho-syndicalist. It's this form of, you know, sort of communism or anarchism, I'm not sure. That system, he goes on to explain the process. Well, we don't have leaders. We have executive officers who are voted on bi-monthly meetings, and that decision is then ratified by a group of executives, you know, and that's boring and complicated and bureaucratic, whereas Arthur's version is actually kind of wonderful, you know, that this spirit, you know, this sort of angel that of nature sort of gives him a sword, this magical thing, and it's, you know, that's kind of wonderful, really. So I don't know, really. I don't know where I stand on it all. But thanks for talking to me and the audience all about this.
Well, I think we've probably gone on rather.
We probably have. You know, I have a running joke on this podcast, which is that people, you know, I wonder how my audience are at this point, and I'm sure that some of them are skeletons with headphones on at this point. They've just perished.
They're just sitting with their head on the desk.
Hitting with their forehead on the desk. I don't know. Listeners, let us know if you are...
Yeah,
you know, if you're still alive and you're still enjoying the conversation at this point, then let us know in the comments section. I hope that you are. Other people, if they checked out before, that's their choice, isn't it? You know, it's a free country, it's a free world, Lapland.
It'd be interesting to know if they watched the coronation on the TV, or at least some of it, what they thought of it.
And whether they violently disagree with our rather cynical views.
Some of them will be shocked if they actually understand what we're saying. Some of them will be shocked.
I am sorry. I hope we don't shock. We don't mean to shock people, but this is the way we feel about things. We're not the only ones.
And my making jokes about it all is just I don't know. It's just a way of dealing with it. You know, I can't help being humorous, and it's okay. But anyway, and again, that's our right, isn't it? It's our right.
Yeah. Yes,
that's in a way a celebration of the whole system.
Yeah.
To kind of make little jokes about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, thank you. Have a nice evening.
Yes, Andrew.
All right. Nice to see you, Luke.
You too. All right.
Bye.
Take care. All right. Bye bye.
A royal wave.
A royal wave. Okay, listeners. So that was my mum and dad. Thanks again to them for taking part in this episode. And everyone, I hope you enjoyed it. Well done for listening all the way through to this point. I've said before, maybe I don't need to congratulate you. For some of you, it's a reward in itself, isn't it? Nevertheless, maybe I'm talking to the people who perhaps struggle to understand this kind of fast, natural speech. I've explained it many times, my justifications for doing that. Why do I need to justify presenting you with authentic conversations like this? No, I don't. But there's always this little voice in the back of my head, maybe the voice of one of my CELTA or DELTA instructors, one of my teacher trainers from back in the days when I was training to be a teacher or getting, you know, higher qualifications in teaching. There's that little voice at the back of my head telling me to grade my English, thinking, what level is it for? You've got to grade your English. All the methodology in my mind and my years of teaching classes of students, and so many of them were at an intermediate level or below, and just so many of the interactions I've had with learners of English over the years have shown me that it's very difficult for people to understand normal, natural speech. And people often don't understand anything, it seems. I don't mean anything. People understand a lot, but I would just play, for example, a recording of people talking, maybe a section of an interview in an English lesson, and people would be completely lost. And that includes students at an intermediate or even an upper intermediate level. I know that. I know that the majority of learners of English in the world wouldn't really be able to follow the conversation that you've just heard. And maybe you're included in that list. Maybe you didn't really understand everything you heard just then, but you're still listening. And that's the good thing. That's the main thing. I honestly believe that you should continue and keep listening, even if it's difficult, because with more and more time and practice, you will start to understand more and more and more. And that is the right thing to be doing. Give yourself a pat on the back for listening all the way through. Again, maybe if you don't need a pat, if you didn't need that encouragement, if you just enjoyed it, then that's great as well. But there you go. As ever, I'm always interested in what you think at this point. What are your thoughts? Do you have thoughts? I hope so. I hope there are things happening in your mind at this point and you're not a skeleton. Let us know in the comments section. Give us your thoughts and stuff. I'm curious to know what you think. Okay. What, you know, out there in the world, when you look at the UK and you look at the ceremony that happened, look at all the sort of these weird ceremonial objects and the costumes, all the marching in the streets, and you see all of these British people waving their flags, and you see people dressed in Union Jack clothing. Like there's always on the news, you always see someone with a Union Jack hat on, a three-piece suit, a Union Jack glasses, waving a Union Jack. You see all these sort of enthusiastic royal supporters, and you could be forgiven for believing that every single person in the country is like that, that we're all just waving our Union Jack flags and just adoring the royal family all the time. I would forgive you if you believed that, because that seems to be the image that is given, right? That's what you see. What you don't see is lots of people sitting at home, not really watching it, or people sitting at home sort of joking about it and looking at it with a sense of humour, or other people sitting there really disagreeing with it, not watching it, you get a slightly, maybe a slightly better sense of public opinion when you go on social media like Twitter and you look through the replies, you know, of British people to things like news stories published by, you know, the BBC or something, and you see people replying with critical statements, people saying they don't like it, or people making fun of it and stuff like that. You know, there's lots of different opinions out there. We don't all think it's wonderful. A lot of people are quite cynical about it, or lots of people are quite humorous about it and stuff like that. So, you know, I wonder what version of things you get in your country, and I wonder if that image is the same as the image that's been presented to you in this episode of the podcast. Let us know by leaving your comments in the comments section. Okay, all right, good. So yeah, it's as I'm recording this, it's the 9th of May. I'm going to publish this on the 10th of May, Wednesday the 10th of May. That's tomorrow. That's when I'm going to publish this. But I'm still stuck in a time loop. I've been saying that recently at the beginning of episodes. I say that I've been saying that. I think what's going to happen is you will hear me saying that over the next few episodes. If you listen all the way through to the end and listen to me rambling a bit at the end of episodes like this, you'll hear me saying that. But just to explain, so it's May. It's the beginning of May now, right? I'll be publishing. So where you are now is that the episode before this, that was the third part of that ChatGPT series. And by the way, people have been writing to me to tell me, oh yeah, ChatGPT-4 is the big thing now. And by the way, there are extensions that you can get that allow you to use your voice. You can actually speak to ChatGPT now and it will speak to you. You can do text to voice and voice to text and stuff like that. So you can actually speak to ChatGPT now. So it does include speaking practice. So people have been, you know, informing me of that. And people also have been saying, what about Microsoft Bing AI, what about, you didn't talk about that? Yeah, that's because I recorded those ChatGPT episodes at the beginning of March, and that's before those speaking extensions had been published and before ChatGPT-4 came out, and that's before Bing AI was launched, I believe. So I wasn't really aware of those things at the time that I recorded the ChatGPT episodes. But in any case, the response to those three episodes has been good. Part one was a huge success in terms of listener numbers, that's for sure, and the podcast is doing really well, but I am in a time loop. So just to give you some context, it's May the 9th. I'm going to publish this tomorrow, May the 10th, okay? And so you're listening to it, hello. And then the next episode, I'm going to be recording that one tomorrow. So tomorrow morning I've got an interview with someone, and I'm going to publish that as the next episode, which will be episode 825, right? That'll be the next one after this. And then with episode 826, we're going to go back to March again and back to the other episodes I've got in my queue, in my big line of episodes, my pipeline of episodes. This is why I'm confused by everything, because it doesn't matter, does it? No, it doesn't matter. Okay. But anyway, I hope you enjoy the episodes that are coming up, the ones that I recorded in March and then in April. Those are the ones that are going to come soon. And hopefully nothing else is going to come up that requires me to record and then publish immediately. Right? And I can just let the episodes publish one by one in chronological order from now on, and then I won't be so confused. Hopefully you're not confused. You don't mind, do you? You're probably like, it doesn't matter, Luke, I don't really care when you recorded the episodes. They're new to us, and that's all that matters. Okay, yeah, good. All right, well, fine. I don't need to worry about it then. Yes, beginning of May. You know, my wife's having a baby, second child, our second child. That is due to happen. The child is due to be born at the very beginning of July. So we are approaching the drop zone. now. Okay, what's the drop zone? I mean, the period when the birth could actually happen. Some people call it the drop zone, and because, you know, babies don't always arrive on the date they're supposed to arrive. The baby might be late. The baby might be early. I mean, this is the second child. It's not uncommon for the second child to arrive a little bit earlier, or at least not to be as late as the first one. So I expect that, if anything, child two will arrive before the due date rather than after. So it's really just a few weeks away. Obviously, I've got the rest of probably about 3 weeks in May. And then I think we're about 4 weeks away from the drop zone at this point. So we're just getting everything ready. I'll be talking about that stuff again in upcoming episodes, I think. When I ramble at the end of the episodes, you'll hear me talking about our preparations and things like that sometimes. But, oh yeah, getting ready. Oh, it's exciting, exciting times. Can't wait to see this little boy. I hope everything goes well. I hope the birth is uncomplicated and straightforward, and everyone's healthy. I hope the baby and my wife both are fit and healthy and all the rest of it. But I'm very curious to see what this little boy is going to be like. What's he going to look like? What color will his eyes be? You know, what's he going to look like? I can't wait. It's crazy. Obviously, I'm a bit nervous about the birth, but also about, you know, all the rest of it. You know, it's quite intense and it requires a lot of time and attention. I hope I'll be able to sleep. Maybe I'll be really sleep deprived. When you listen to episodes that are going to come after the birth of the child, maybe I'll be, you're listening to what's the name of this pod? Who am I? What? You're listening to a thing. Is anyone? Am I listening to? I am listening to myself, and just, it might be like that. Who knows? I might be completely confused and sleep deprived. But we will see. It was okay with the first one, with child one. It was all right. I managed to continue podcasting. In fact, sometimes I was recording episodes with the baby in a little sort of cot thing next to me, and so that was all right. Anyway, I'm going to stop rambling now, but there you go. All right, okay. So yes, I will let you get back to your normal life. Thank you so much for listening. Okay, have a lovely, lovely evening. Oh, by the way, I should say, premium subscribers, did you notice on Monday, that's yesterday, yesterday morning, Monday the 8th, I published P48 parts 1 and 2. Okay, P48 parts 1 and 2 got published yesterday, so they are available. Just in case you didn't know, just in case you hadn't noticed, they are there for you, ready for you right now. And I hope that you have added Luke's English Podcast Premium to a podcast app on your phone, right? If you don't know how to do that, go to my website, teacherluke.co.uk/premium info. Premium info. That's where you go to get all of the info about how to use Luke's English Podcast Premium properly. And if you go there, you will learn how to add Luke's English Podcast Premium to a podcast app on your phone. I recommend Pocket Casts because it's a good app, and also it allows you to search for episodes in your podcast list. So if you find your Luke's English Podcast Premium subscription in Pocket Casts, you'll see a search bar, and then you can search, for example, P48, and it will show you those episodes, or P20, and it'll show you those episodes, or whatever, you know, whichever premium episode you're looking for. You just type in the premium number, the title of the episode, the code, and Pocket Casts will show you exactly where it is, and then you'll be able to just listen to it really easily. You can download the episode in Pocket Casts and listen to it offline, and all the rest of it. Okay, there are video versions as well. You get the links for the videos and the PDFs in the show notes in your podcast app of choice that you have used to subscribe to Luke's English Podcast Premium. It all seems unnecessarily complicated, but it's not. It's just somehow difficult to explain. But go to my website and it'll show you exactly what you need to do. But anyway, P48, it's another story time episode. And that one is a story that appeared in episode, 807, I think? The one with John Stewart, the musician, the pop star, and academic university lecturer. And basically, it's a version of his anecdote that he told about the time that he had an encounter with John Lennon's piano and what happened. And it's a story that involves John Stewart, John Lennon, George Michael, the English pop star, and this piano. And it's a great little story. And so I've made some English learning resources out of it, including the usual grammar, vocabulary, pronunciation exercises. So check out P48. It's available now. If you aren't subscribed to LEP Premium, then, you know, you could do that if you want. That's how you get access to those extra episodes. And you can do it by going to teacherluke.co.uk/premium. Okay. All right, then. Thank you so much for listening. I will speak to you again in the next part. But for now, it's time to say goodbye. Bye. 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 Bye.
Thanks for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.